We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike DeTellier along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Charlie Long in studio. A little after 6:20 tonight, we'll be visiting with Chessa Boucher, who's been on the tour, so to speak. She's covering LSU's women's basketball team and, again, outside the state of Louisiana, covering as the Tigers play Utah. The Utah Utes, Bob, that was one of your...
Yeah, the Utes. The Utes, it's an Indian tribe. It's not, Y-O-U-T-H, like a youth of America. No, the Utes, U-T-E, apostrophe S, I think that's right, the Utah Utes. Mike, if you look at their program, I think that was one of the best things. You know, you look realignment when they joined the Pac-12.
I'm not sure Pac-12 teams look too crazy about them. Man, they give you a different brand of football. Tough, Coach Whittingham.
To me, they surpassed. Like when I was playing, BYU was always the top dog over Utah.
But they were more of a finesse team.
Right. But
Utah is nothing close to finesse.
And I think because they're a coach.
Oh, yeah. And his dad, got to know him a little bit. He was an original member of the New Orleans Saints, Fred Whittingham. Talk about a fighting fool. And he would tell you about some of the adventures that he got into here in New Orleans when he was here. And just legendary stuff from his dad.
The original founder of the Dirty Bird is a Utah Ute. He's from Los Angeles, that being Jamal Anderson.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, when they ran – the Falcons ran him into the ground. I was doing the radio there.
And then they
gave him over 400 carries in a season.
Then, Bob, he tears up his knee on a Monday night game, non-contact.
Dallas. I want to say against Dallas.
Wasn't even touched.
And he just his target –
snapped.
It's kind of like Zion. He had gigantic thighs, kind of like big legs like Dalton Hilliard, maybe even like bigger, and almost the muscles are too strong for the joint. And then he never was the same. But he was the one that started out with that Dirty Bird dance. I never forget this. Now, they went to the Super Bowl, but they lost to the Broncos and John Elway in Miami at that time.
We're going to go back to our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line. We're going to go to Rod and Pass Christiane. Rod, you're in the huddle with Mike and Bobby.
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you. Got a quick question. So everybody's excited about Derek Carr coming on. I'm certainly part of that group. I mean, I don't think it's the next coming of Drew Brees. But my question is, why were the Raiders so reluctant to re-sign him? I mean, I know the money part of it, but that for a top-level quarterback – don't think that, you know, $5 or $10 million would get in the way of keeping somebody like that. So tell me, why were the Raiders so hip on letting him go?
Josh McDaniel.
Exactly. The head coach.
He has never taken blame for anything at any place he's ever done. It's always someone else. So he sold this to Mark Davis. We could have won a heck of a lot more games if we'd have had a different quarterback than Derek Carr. No, the failure is really on Josh McDaniel. I'm telling you. And now he brings in Jimmy.
He's even in the position that he's in. He can thank his lucky stars with Tom Brady, with the Patriots. Look, a lot like Coach Allen, you got to see who can maybe go to the forefront and win. But he's had chances. Mike, he was with Denver before, then he went back to New England, now he's with the Raiders. So I think it's because of the head coach. And then you might say, well, I'm familiar. It's all about who you're familiar, who you
contact. He was familiar with Jimmy G.
Jimmy Garoppolo, Jimmy G. So that's why I think that's how that transition came about, why the Raiders weren't sold on Derek Carr because of the head coach.
The other thing about it is the fact that, listen, I'm a fan of Jimmy G. I think he's a winner. He wins a ton of regular season games. Now, postseason is a different story, but regular season, he wins. But he's so fragile. because he's going to miss a huge chunk of the season each and every year.
Oh, okay, Rod. Mike, I don't know if you agree with this, but this is my opinion. And Rod, I can tell you right now, okay, you look at Jimmy G, you look at Derek Carr. It is right place, right time. Jimmy G is a winning quarterback. You know why? Look at the teams he's been on. He's been on like the Patriots and then
49ers.
So look at his supporting cast. You cannot tell me that Derek Carr, if you just put him head-to-head, Derek Carr is a more talented quarterback than Jimmy Garoppolo. So in my opinion, if you put Derek Carr on the 49ers, maybe the 49ers would have won a Super Bowl instead of getting there and not winning. I think Derek Carr is better than Jimmy Garoppolo.
I agree.
You look at the Raiders. Derek Carr never even had a top 20 defense.
The other thing about it is, and having Ben Roethlisberger admit this week that the 49ers reached out to him to see if he wanted to come out of retirement to play with them late in the year. So they weren't actually sold on maybe Purdy being that guy. Maybe we'd have to go to the veteran. Phillip Rivers said he made an overture to the 49ers. That wasn't accepted because I think what happened is agents talk, and he found out that they reached out to Roethlisberger.
And you know, Big Ben's probably thinking like, what? I thought nobody would want me anymore. I'm just speculating here. I don't know. He goes, man, I'm up to 270. I'm not ready to go back and play an NFL quarterback.
I would have liked to see how that worked out with him and Shanahan.
No, so somebody, I'd like to know, since he's retired, where Big Ben is at. Because he was always a big quarterback when he was playing. Is he bigger now? Or he decided to get more in shape as a lifestyle? Somebody,
I don't know, but he was never a guy that was noted for being the workout guy in the offseason.
No,
man, I'm taking it easy.
Yeah, where are we going to get pizza after practice? You know, so Charlie, I gotta see a modern day picture of Big Ben.
I'll look him up.
Yeah, to see where he's at.
We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. And Chesa Boucher, covering the LSU women's basketball team, will be on with us right after this break.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, Charlie Long in studio, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, Miss Chesa Boucher, who's racking up some frequent flyer miles covering the LSU Lady Basketball team. Chesa, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
How are y'all? How y'all doing?
I'm doing great. Chesa, LSU is where I think Kim Mulkey wants it to be today. Playing for something late in the season up against Utah. And I saw the opening line on it. LSU's a 5.5-point favorite over Utah.
5.5-point favorite.
And so, you know, I know last week she came on with us. Guys, I got to tell y'all, all I want right now, is one more win than we had last year. One more win. And she got it. Now, she might have changed the tune that she wants now another win and another win, but she was adamant about, we got to get one more win, one more win. And I know she sort of does a lot of things to motivate her team, and she talked about she went to her freshman players and talked to them about, hey, it's going to be a different situation here, much more physical. Has that been, again, part of her speech going up against Utah? Chess, I'll be honest, I thought Michigan would put up a much tougher fight than what they did.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I will be 100% honest. I was nervous going into that matchup because if you look at what Michigan brings to the table, they are long. They have a ton of length. And the two teams that LSU has lost to this year, South Carolina and Tennessee, they're both long, have a lot of length, and they can run the floor, and they struggled against them. And so going against Michigan, I just had a bad gut feeling. But I agree with you. I think Kim Mulkey is full of boo-boo. I think, yeah, it sounds good to talk to the press and say, yeah, we just want one more the next year or from last year. But she's a competitor. She's not going to go in there and act like one more win is okay. She wants to win it all. We understand that it's just year two. She's way far ahead of the game. It took her 5 years to win a national championship at Baylor. And what she's been able to do this season with nine new faces, one returning starter, and bringing in Angel Reese, and, of course, having the number one recruiting class for next season, it's impressive. But, yeah, I thought the Michigan game was going to be a battle. I didn't expect them to play defense the way that they did. That was the most complete game that we've seen from LSU this season. And it was ironic because today, Flaje Johnson, the true freshman, she said, we asked her about, you know, did they grow from that game? And she was like, to be honest, I felt like we were all on one string. And she was like, defensively, we just knew what each other, knew what we were going to do. And it was like everybody was in sync. And I think that's been a lot of the issue this season is they hadn't really been on the same page. And they have struggled to have offensive production for more than Angel Reese and one other player. I think if you look at their record, as long as they have three people that are in double figures, they're getting the win. And I think that was the biggest takeaway is that they had a balanced scoring attack in round two. And also just that dominating performance yet again by Angel Reese is what we've come to, you know, expect from her, especially here in the postseason. What she's been able to do in the first two rounds has just been absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah, Chessie, you talk about Angel Reese. You know, always like records. Look at LSU NCAA tournament record, tying 34 points against Hawaii, and then an LSU NCAA tournament record. Now this, not double-digit rebounds, but more 24 rebounds against Michigan. Boy, talk about attacking the ball and saying that ball is my ball. 24 rebounds. That was shocking when I looked at that number.
Oh, 100%. I mean, if I ever played with a true post player like that, I would lead the NCAA in assists. Like, without a doubt, it would have been freaking phenomenal. I don't know if y'all saw this. Her 25 points, 24 rebounds, and 6 blocks against Michigan is the first by any player, man or woman, in the NCAA tournament since 2000. Yeah, so it's one of those things of what she's been able to do has just been phenomenal. And I've just never really seen a post player have such a knack for the basketball. It's like nobody's going to get in her way. Nobody is going to deter her from getting to the hoop. And it has been crazy to see, and to think that she has a few more years in Baton Rouge just makes you think that this team, if they don't get it done this year and make a run to the Final Four next year, though, they will be in the Final Four without a doubt.
Now, Chess, now I don't think Coach Mulkey revealed this, but after beating Hawaii and then the challenge with the Michigan Wolverines to reach the Sweet 16, Coach Mulkey said she gave her players 5 keys to beating Michigan, but she didn't divulge what they were. And she said, if we do the 5 things we did in the Michigan game, it's going to be a special time for us. Well, what in the hell is the 5 things? We can speculate or what? I mean, Coach Mulkey's throwing that out there.
You know a lot better than we do, Chester.
So that's the mystery. But what is the 5 things that we got to do against Utah and possibly pass that in Miami or Villanova?
Yeah, the 5 things I think would be to be smart with the basketball. You have to limit your turnovers, and then you also have to force turnovers. With Utah, they do not have a lot of turnovers, so it's one of those things you have to try to turn them over because they're very smart in the basketball. The 2 other games that LSU has lost this season, it came down to rebounding. They were out-rebounded. Those are the only 2 games against South Carolina and against Tennessee. They were out-rebounded. In fact, Angel Reese only had 4 offensive boards. Or no, LSU only had 4 offensive boards against the Lady Vols, and Angel Reese didn't have any, which is her bread and butter is to get to the offensive glass. And so those 3 things for sure, and I would say in the postseason especially, you have to shoot better from the floor and also be strong from the charity stripe. If you're not a great, free throw shooting team, I think you'll struggle in the postseason just because a lot of games do come down to free throws. If you make your free throws at the end of the ballgame when you're supposed to, you're going to win a lot of games. And I think those are some of the biggest threats that Utah, you know, gives LSU facing this Tiger squad, because they have a hell of a player. It's the Pac-12 Player of the Year, Alyssa Pealey. She's going to be a big girl down low, and to try to guard her is going to be a big task. Yet again, I hate to keep going back and talking about the negatives, because LSU's team has had such a season. Right. But again, the only two teams that you struggled against, South Carolina and Tennessee, they both have really skilled perimeter-oriented post players. And so I think that opens up the floor. And so LSU just needs to be smart defensively and really get after it. And I think if you can limit Alyssa down inside, then I think LSU will run away with this one. But again, they have another balanced scoring attack, much like Michigan. So I think it's going to be one of those defensive battles. I don't think either teams are really going to put up a ton of points. I just think it's going to be a real grinded out game. And if LSU can get scoring from two other players aside from Angel Reese, because I don't think anybody is stopping Angel Reese in the postseason. She said after the Tennessee loss in the SEC tournament, she got back to work, and I just see a different hunger and a different desire in her eyes since that. And every time I ask Coach Mulkey or Angel about it, she tells me that Tennessee game, that was a game that I only had four rebounds against the Lady Vols in the SEC tournament. And she's like, that's not going to get it. And she is after making a statement in the postseason. And I think that was the fire that she needed to get to the next level. So I think it's going to be hard for Utah to stop her, but again, she needs some help.
You know, Chess, like Mike had said earlier, I don't know, it's not a pick-em game, because LSU a five-and-a-half-point favorite against Utah. They're 27-4 in the regular season, number two seed. But if they can get past Utah, I think LSU's likely going to be favored over whoever wins Friday's other semifinal between number nine Miami or number four Villanova in Sunday's regional final, and that LSU would go on to Dallas in the Final Four. But you know what's crazy? Now, we wish it was on the other side of the bracket, but they wouldn't play, if they would keep winning, they wouldn't play South Carolina in the finals. It'd be in the Final Four, the semifinals.
Yep.
To get to that championship game. So, but I think they can at least get to the Final Four. If they win against Utah, I think they go into the Final Four.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and especially both Villanova and Miami, not a ton of postseason experience, especially down the stretch, which I think plays a huge factor. You could say the same for LSU, though. Angel Reese has been to the Sweet 16 with Maryland. Poole, Kateri Poole, she was with Ohio State, who beat LSU last year in the second round. They got to the Sweet 16, so you do have a few players that have a little bit of experience, but I just think this team is clicking at the right time. They seem to kind of have found that rhythm and found that chemistry that maybe had been off throughout the season. And I just think they're playing their best ball, and I think it's up to them. I don't think it's going to be what Utah brings. I think it's who shows up tomorrow night against Utah is what is going to be the deciding factor in LSU making it to Dallas.
Chessa, in hearing that scouting report you gave about Utah, to me, wouldn't it make a lot of sense to try to run the court against them? I think, you know, sort of wear them down. Use your speed and get up and down the court, because you know what Utah wants to do. They want to put that ball inside and let the big lady make this shot. But if you can run the court and sort of wear them down, then, you know, they settling for twos and you might be able to get a couple of threes out of the deal. But if you run in the court, to me, that seems to be the blueprint if it's for this game against Utah and the next.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's what we saw against Michigan. And at first, I was talking to a buddy of mine, and I was like, I don't know if I'd want to run the floor against like a South Carolina just because they have so much depth. And Utah doesn't seem to have that type of depth. And what we saw in Michigan, they didn't have that type of depth.
No.
And they like to run the floor, but they were slower when it came to athleticism. Like, they weren't as quick on their first step or that second step. And so I think what we saw from LSU, they were quick to get the ball out. They just kind of ran it down their throat, and Michigan didn't have a response for it. So I think you're right, Bobby. I think you have to, you know, run and gun and see what Utah, if they can keep pace with you. Because I'm telling you, what I've seen from Peely. I don't think she can hang with Angel Reese. I think she will give her a fight in the beginning, but Angel Reese is just, she's a dominant force inside. The way that she can drive to the hoop, the way she can make her moves there around the basket, I just don't see Peely being able to stop Angel. And I think what we've seen from Angel and her court vision, if she wants to go inside out and find some of these guards. And I think Alexis Morris is about to go off. I think she's been quiet in the first two games, had a disappointing game against Hawaii, and then last time, or against Michigan, you know, finally got in double figures. But I just think Alexis Morris is about due, and she said today she likes the rims here. She had a great SEC tournament run, and I think she's going to be due, and I agree with you. I think you have to run and gun and just kind of see what Utah can, you know, how they respond to that.
Now, Chessa, who's been a surprise team looking at the whole tournament? I'm going to tell you mine, the Ole Miss Lady Rebels, beating Stanford, the top seed. And all I know is I'm casually just looking at this. I don't know how LSU played South Carolina. All I know is Ole Miss took South Carolina to overtime.
Yeah, no intimidation of South Carolina.
So would you say Ole Miss, maybe right where they're at, they could be one of those dark horses?
Chess, you've seen a lot of lady basketball, but Ole Miss seems to be almost like that assassin waiting in the wings. Okay, I've gotten the ring with the champ. I'm not scared of them. We took them to overtime. I'm not scared of South Carolina at any level, and nobody's given us a chance to win this. All I know is from a matchup standpoint, no one matched up better against South Carolina than Ole Miss.
Oh, I agree 100%. I don't know if y'all know this, but I went to Ole Miss for undergrad, and I played ball there my freshman year. Coach Yeo, what she's been able to do with that program, they play a lot like her. She is fiery. She is in your face. And she coaches a lot like Kim Mulkey. Defense is number one, and that's what you've been able to see from the Rebels. They are all about defense, and their defense leads to offense, and that's how they've been so successful. But they are fearless, and it's surprising just because this program hasn't had a ton of success, especially in the past 10, 15 years. So to see them playing in the postseason like they are, they're not scared of anybody. And they put up a fight against LSU this year, so – yeah, I was very surprised with Ole Miss upsetting them, but it would be Ole Miss and Miami for me are the two biggest surprises because Miami finished sixth in the ACC. It's a powerful conference. Did we even remotely expect them to get to the Sweet 16? No, and especially knocking off Stanford in Bloomington, like I was just absolutely stunned by that. So, yeah, those are my two dark horses that I just did not anticipate seeing them make a Sweet 16 appearance.
Chess, will be the last question for you. Is there a player on this LSU basketball team that this is their shining moment, okay? This is where they explode because we know who the star of this team is. But is there someone on that verge that this tournament is going to really put their name on the marquee?
That is a good question because I feel like we've seen Flage have a good game. We've seen Alexis Morris take over ball games. We've seen Angel Reese do really, really well. I think Kateri Poole was one of the people that surprised me the most with her performance against Michigan. She'd been kind of quiet, didn't do a whole lot. Kim talked about how her defense always kind of made a statement. Kim put her in the starting lineup, and had Angel Reese made a few of her first shots rather than having second and third shots, opportunities on the offensive glass and making her first shot, Kateri Poole would have had like 10 assists. So I think for this LSU team, I think Poole is the one that really has surprised me in the postseason. I'm interested to see how she plays against Utah because if Utah is a big physical team, she kind of shines in those moments. And she also really surprised me in Columbia against South Carolina. She was one of the other players. Her and Samaya Smith really just surprised me at playing how well they played in the situation. LSU got off to the worst start you could possibly ask for, but they were fearless and they were ready to go and ready to play. So I think Kateri Poole would be the one in the postseason that has surprised me the most.
Chess, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate it. Always gives us great insights.
Absolutely, guys. Y'all have a good one.
All righty. Chessa Boucher from Baton Rouge Proud, covering the LSU Lady Tiger basketball team. And I think she's got maybe one more adventure.
So is she related to Bobby Boucher?
No.
The Bouchers, they all got to be related, right?
Yeah, somewhere along. Yeah. But she's not related to Bobby Boucher. But I think sometimes, depending on the mood, she'll say yes.
Yeah, well, exactly.
We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike DeTellier along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, at 7:20 tonight. We'll have on the head football coach from the Southeastern Lions, Frank Selfo, will be on with us. Bob, I see you got something.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Mike, because, you know, we talked about all the Saints free agents and who's coming on board. I'm not familiar. You know, I'm sure you're familiar. You know, when you look at rosters and players coming into the league, and you look at the Saints offensive line, I mean, it caught my attention because who names their kid Storm? I don't know. Storm Norton. His name's Storm. And he said that he went to Toledo, that Toledo Rockets, my understanding. And he says, you know, our family, we grew up in Toledo area, so we're pretty close to Detroit. My mom and dad took me to a Detroit Tigers game one day, and the pitcher happened to be named Storm Davis.
Yep.
And he says, I guess at that moment, they kind of knew we're going to go in that direction and we have a kid. So he's Storm Norton. Now he enters his fifth year in the NFL with his third team. Now, this would caught my attention. He has the ability to play on the left or right side, and that being tackle. Not only in the interior, he said being able to He said being able to play both tackles, I think that helps me to really be valuable in the league. Now he entered the NFL as an undrafted free agent, like we said at Toledo in 2018 with the Vikings. And then in 2020, he's been with the Chargers. Now, Mike, now this is why I'm positive on this, because what have you done for me lately? Lately, he's been starting. He's been playing. Now, you say, well, why didn't the Chargers keep him? Maybe you can elaborate on that. But look, including the last three seasons, he played in 36 of a possible 50 games, and he started 18. But in 2021, he started 15 to 17 appearances. He, you know, said, I'm going to New Orleans now. He talked to Will Clapp, and Will Clapp had nothing but great things to say about the Saints organization. So could he be that swing tackle? Not necessarily a starter, but if you got to plug and play, because, Mike, he has started basically a season plus in the National Football League very similar to name slipping my mind from Oregon. Who wasn't drafted, who we played
guard. Throckmorton. Calvin Throckmorton.
Okay, we started the season with Calvin Throckmorton as starter. No, but you have injuries, and then he has done a solid job when you plug and play him. Is the question I have for you, is Storm Norton that kind of guy, like a Throckmorton version of a tackle?
I think he's a guy that you don't want to really start for a long period
right.
of time.
But plug and play, right?
As a swing tackle, yes. By what I've seen of him, he has struggled with the speed part of the game. I think he's a really good run blocker. He gets his hands on you quick. He moves people around as an inline blocker. The problem has been, man, when you 6'7"
six
and
foot
change,
seven.
It is hard for you to bend at the knees and adjust to the real quick guys. Now, a guy like Trent Williams is unbelievable because he's a lot bigger width-wise than Storm Norton. But that's what has given him issues. When I watched him with the Chargers, he had a lot of problems with an initial really hard speed move.
Well, Mike, like you said, he's 6'7" plus. But to me, I'm looking at a picture of him. He looks kind of skinny, and he weighs 317 pounds.
He's a thin-based guy.
He could be his body, his height and all. He could be like 330, 340 and not look like he's fat. No, he's 317. He almost looks skinny.
But I think now, he keeps his weight down because he knows the speed, quickness element
right.
has given him problems, and he wants to match up better.
Right. But Mike, boy, if he could solidify that position that you could count on maybe one, two, or three games, whatever, when you have injuries, Mike, he's 29 years of age, coming into training camp. So he knows he's right now, not last hurrah,
but
he has to take advantage of the opportunity.
Either that or he'll be playing in the USFL or XFL.
Right.
We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. We're finishing up here on our number three of sports talk on the Big 870. Mike DeTelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're going to go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. We're going to go to Mac and Kenner. Mac, you're in the huddle with Bobby and Mike.
Hey, Bobby and Mike. Look, I know you guys are probably familiar with Jerry Valancourt, who used to be the Hornets announcer.
He passed away a few weeks back.
Yeah, he passed away, I think, in late last year. Anyway, my wife's cousin is big friends with him, and they're having a celebration of life with Jerry today, his family and friends. So I just thought I'd call and give a shout out to him. Yeah, he was got to know him. He was a character.
He was a character, and Jerry did a couple of movies. He was sort of a bit or a piece actor, what we would call. And he came in and did a little part in a couple of movies while he was here in New Orleans, because it was all with Hollywood South. And I knew the people that had hired him, and they was like, "Hey, do you know who Jerry Valancourt is?" Yeah. He said, "Well, we got him." He says he's an announcer. I said, "No, he didn't say it. He is one. He is a sports announcer."
Yeah, Jerry V.
Yeah. Jerry V. And anyway, he was one of those guys who came to New Orleans, and he embraced the culture, man. He fit right into this town. But I just thought I'd give a shout out to him.
All right. Thank you, Mac. Sure enough.
Okay. So where was he from, Mac?
From the New York area, right, Mac?
I think he's originally from New York, I believe.
One of the boroughs. I don't know which borough, but he was definitely New York.
And he was pals with Al McGuire when Al was alive.
Marquette Warrior coach.
Jerry got involved with a lot of different basketball clinics earlier on.
We did a couple of shows on HTV with Martin Falls. Saints on the Bayou became Sports on the Bayou, so Jerry V came down there.
And Jerry did the Pelicans version of that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was Hornets Pelicans version of it, to be honest.
More Hornets.
Yeah, in that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Thanks so much for the call, Mac. I appreciate
that. You're welcome, guys. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Right, yeah, Jerry V. Man, you were right about it. He was certainly the character and knew a lot about college basketball and certainly transitioned that into the NBA. And he was the radio voice for a long time.
Yeah, a long time. And, Mike, staying on that basketball topic and recognition before we go to the top of the hour, we were going to talk about this last night, but it seems like Magic Johnson is always involved.
If it's financial, he's involved.
Yes, as far as a prominent executive, whatever. Look at Magic Johnson. He joined Josh Harris's bid to buy the NFL's Washington Commanders. Now, he's become a prominent executive. Like I said, he's already involved in sports ownership with stakes in the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Major League Soccer Los Angeles FC, and the WNBA's Los Angeles Sparks. Now, he also was part of Josh Harris's team with their bid, unsuccessful, to buy the Denver Broncos.
Yep.
We all know instead they were sold to Walmart and the heir, Rob Walton, for $4.65 billion. But watch it, because that's the minority ownership and all. Watch if Josh Harris and Magic Johnson, they don't end up owning the Washington Commanders.
We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.